your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to a special edition of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Saturday, May 17, 2025. As we record this new episode, the White Sox are taking on the Cubs at Wrigley Field this weekend, but as the team completes the first quarter and so many new faces have already come and gone this 2025 season for the White Sox, it's a good time to check in on how the top prospects are faring. We are expecting more promotions to come as Chase Mydroth and Edgar Caro are pretty much regulars at this point. Tim Elko is finding ways to merit more playing time as Andrew Vaughn continues to struggle. White Sox manager Will Venable was asked in his pre-series presser with the beat reporters about how to know when the time is right to call up prospects.
Oh, you have to, you know, take each one of these guys, case by case. They all have their path to getting here, and there's things that they're working on and continuing to develop. And certainly, you know, good performance in the minor leagues are indications that those adjustments are working. But there's a lot of stuff that goes into, you know, being a finished product and then coming up here and having success too. So we just want to make sure that each of these guys are ready to go when their time comes. Well, I think there's certain criteria in, you know, for pitchers and hitters and defenders that, you know, you have to be able to, achieve. And at the same time, it's how you're dealing with failure. It's how you're studying. It's your process for preparing and game planning and some of these they're not ancillary, they're very important, but things you don't see on the field that guys are continuing to develop too. So, you just take it case by case and continue to help them learn.
Joining us to talk about the latest top 100 prospect update on MLB.com, how the White Sox prospects are faring, and also look ahead to the MLB draft as new mock drafts and top prospect lists are being updated, is one of our best friends of the show. From MLB.com, it's Jim Callis. And hello, Jim. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Josh, last time we did this live, so
we did, yeah,
which was fun. But it's good to talk to you. How I always feel like I need to do like a wellness check with like all the White Sox fans I know whenever I talk to them. What's your how are you feeling right now in terms of what's your level of stress or optimism, depending on which way you want to go with it?
Yeah, that's a great question, because we are recording this the day after the Cubs beat the White Sox 13-3. And it's like, man, the White Sox could definitely use a Pete Crow Armstrong. I can't believe that. Did you ever foresee Pete Crow Armstrong being this good of an offensive player, Jim?
No. And like, I thought it was going to be 20 homers max. And like, look, maybe this will be his career in homers and he'll settle in. But like, it's funny. Like, I still remember, this is funny. Like, so when the Cubs acquired him in the Javi Baez trade, which at the time it sounded like it was Steve Cohen's, I think, first year with the Mets. And I think some of his minions, as opposed to his baseball people, were like, oh, trade that Crow Armstrong kid. Cause you know, he'd messed up his shoulder. I think he tore a labrum diving into a base. He'd only played 6 games as a pro and they didn't really value him. But I had somebody with another team tell me they thought that was the worst trade at the deadline anybody made was the Mets. And it wasn't an anti Javi Baez interpretation. It was just like, I can't believe they gave PCA away. But I still remember going on Marquee for trade deadline show, and Cole Wright, I thought, was going to vomit because he asked me about PCA, and I said, there's a lot of comparison, a lot of parallels between him and Albert Almora. And Cole Wright was just like taken aback by that statement. But really at the time it was true. I mean, he's a lefty hitter, but it was the first thing that you noticed about him was like, it was kind of a defense, hit over power, lower offensive ceiling, center fielder is what he was. And it was kind of an Albert Almora parallel, but no, I didn't think I think he's got what, 12 home runs now?
Yeah.
So what's that? Like, is he on like a 40 homer pace more than that?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Craig. And cause the thing is with PCA, he's so good defensively that if he was like a 240, 12 or 15 homer hitter, he'd still probably be a 4-WAR player. Like, he'd still be a really good player for the Cubs. So this is all gravy.
Yeah, and from White Sox perspective, like, the starting pitching, maybe it is smoke and mirrors, but they have been getting good pitching. Shane Smith has been a revelation, even though he had a really bad inning, gave up 6 runs in the second inning against
the
Cubs.
Well, they gave him 2 extra outs, though, too. Like, that didn't help. Like, no. That could have been a lot quicker inning.
Miguel Vargas, this turnaround ever since he made the hand adjustment against Minneapolis, he's hitting for more power. His defense has gotten so much better at third base this year. But on the flip side, we're almost game 50, Jim. Andrew Vaughn and Luis Robert are still batting below 200. Like, forget OPS and on base percentage and slugging, which our podcast listeners know. I cite those before batting average. But when you're getting to game 50 and you're playing as often as Luis Robert and Andrew Vaughn, and you're still batting below the Mendoza line, like every critical red alert is going off right now. And it's not helping the White Sox cause, and it's not helping Chris Getz's cause, because I imagine, Jim, that he wanted to trade Luis Robert before the deadline to bring back some more prospects to help out with their pipeline.
No, I agree. Hey, at least, I mean, you don't have to watch Jacob Amaya hit. Like, if 200 is a Mendoza line, what's 100? Like,
I don't know. The Amaya line.
Yeah, like he couldn't even get there. But no, I mean, I do think, yeah, I mean, Andrew Vaughn, like, I don't, like, and I know you didn't bring him, like, I don't think you were going to get a lot of trade value for him. Like, Andrew Vaughn, sadly, is kind of a lost cause. And, like, that one baffles me because, yeah, I mean, I don't blame them for taking him third. I mean, sadly for the White Sox, there were six really good players at the top of the draft, and they took the worst one. But it wasn't like they reached. I mean, everybody thought Andrew Vaughn, this guy's a lock to hit, and he hasn't hit. So like that one, like you're not going to get anything for him. That's just a lost cause. But like Luis Robert, the way I would look at that one is they still have 2 months for him to turn it around. Like you don't have to trade him by the end of May. I mean, yeah, would you rather he was hitting 281 with an ops, you know, around 800? I mean, he is leading the American League in steals. So you got that. But yeah, I just think you just need Luis Robert to get hot for a month. You know, and then I think he builds up that value, and they will be able to get for some form. Although, I don't know if it's just me. It just seems like he just always looks unhappy. You know how last year, like, I don't know if I ever told you this, like Miguel Vargas, like I always felt like Miguel Vargas looked just shell-shocked, like, hey, I've gone from the Dodgers to the White Sox. Like, I don't know what to make of this. And Miguel Vargas always looked just unhappy. Now Luis Robert's the guy who never looks happy when I see him on the field. There's still something there, but I do think if he gets hot for a month, people forget the hot start and they could trade him for something. But yeah, this isn't helping their cause. You know, obviously the better he plays, the more you get for him.
Right. So as a White Sox fans conflicted, you can find areas of optimism. And I think that's a good place to start with the top 100 prospect update for MLB.com. We're going to start at the bottom list and move up top because the 58th ranked prospect on MLB.com is Edgar Caro. And he's with the White Sox. And he's been giving White Sox fans some reasons to be optimistic. As we record this, he's batting .293 with a .384 on base percentage. That's good. Now, in our previous podcast episode, we did talk about that slugging percentage and how it's below his on-base percentage, which isn't great. His framing and blocking numbers have been below league average, according to Baseball Savant, but Caro is 6-for-12 throwing out base stealers, which is pretty impressive. It's still early, Jim, but is Caro performing at a level that maybe you were expecting or the White Sox personnel were expecting as he now joins the major leagues?
Yeah, I think you're kind of seeing, you know, look, a lot of times rookies come up and they struggle at first, and he hasn't, and that's been a positive. But I think he's kind of, he's actually a case where he's come up and he's showing you kind of like everything's pretty much in line with, you know, realistically what he is, to be honest. I do think, you know, it's interesting because I always say, like, it's easier to say this to guys and then actually do it, but I feel like he's doing this where you got to the big leagues for a reason. Don't try to do too much. Just keep doing what you do. And he's done that. Like, he's always, I think he's going to be a hit over power guy. I think there is more power in there. I think he's going to be a guy who hits for average. It's probably going to be 15 to 20 homer power, depending on how many at bats he gets, you know, as a catcher. I think the arm is better than the receiving. I think, you know, the blocking and framing, it's like, it's small sample size, but like it's around, he's what, around the 15th or 16th percentile, which is probably a little harsher, but like he's probably, Edgar Caro in his prime is probably going to be a guy who hits close to 300 with, you know, 15 plus homers. and he'll be a fringy catcher with average arm strength. Like he's thrown out a few more base runners than you'd think, so far. But I think kind of what you're seeing with Edgar Caro is probably what you're going to get with him, honestly.
Well, so far that's been good.
Yeah.
The
No, I
on
mean,
base.
but that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, it's all been legit. And I do think, I mean, look, he's not going to have an isolated power of 40 for his career. He will, I guess he's on pace right now. If he played a full season, he'd have 18 doubles and no other extra base hits. He's going to have more pop than that. But I'm impressed that a lot of these guys you see come up to big leagues and they try to do too much. And he's controlling the strike zone. He's drawing walks. He's not striking out. I mean, it's weird. You usually don't see a guy come up and be exactly what you thought. At least instantly. The Paul Skeens is a world. That's a different animal. But he's really kind of been across the board everything you'd think he'd be. And honestly, he's not a top 100 prospect and he's graduating now. But Chase Meidroth is kind of similar. I think there's a little bit more power in Chase, but Chase is an extreme hit over power guy, and he's probably played a little bit better defense than you'd expect. But Chase Meidroth, for the most part, has been kind of what I think he's going to be in the long term too.
So with Kyle Teal waiting in the wings still at AAA, and as we record this, Teal is the 28th ranked prospect on MLB.com. He's got a 765 OPS with Charlotte. It's four home runs in 36 games for Teal. One, are you surprised, Jim, that Caro beat Teal to the majors?
I'm not for two reasons. One, at the time they promoted him, and I'll give the White Sox a lot of credit. I think they played this perfectly. Both those guys made sense to start the year at AAA, but you didn't really necessarily want them both in AAA together the whole year because they'd have to split the catching 50-50. And they both probably need to catch, two-thirds to three-quarters of the time because they both need to refine their defense. So it made sense to split them up. I think the two reasons it made sense to promote Caro is one, Teal got off to a really slow start. And he's been a lot better recently. So Caro was outperforming him, one. And I know the White Sox believe that Caro is probably a tick ahead of Teal defensively at this point because he's caught a lot more than Kyle Teal has. Teal didn't catch a ton as a high schooler because he was, he's more athletic than most catchers. So it made sense when they did it. So no, I wasn't surprised that they did it that way. And like I said, I mean, kudos to Kyle Teal because he's gotten, I mean, I remember at the beginning of the season, I want to say he was really, really struggling. And I was looking at his numbers this morning, I was like, oh, he's really gotten him up there.
So the second part is you're still expecting to see Teal with the White Sox, maybe post trade deadline.
It's hard to say because. I'm just gonna say it, and if I get in trouble, whatever. MLB doesn't like it when we talk about teams trying to hold people's service time down. Here's the thing: if I'm the White Sox or any other team in a situation like the White Sox, there is zero reason now for me to promote Kyle Teal to where he's going to get enough service time or at bats to graduate off my list. I would not promote Kyle Teal, even if he's tearing it up at this point, because I want Caro to catch somewhat regularly. Until he can't get more than 45 days of service time, because I want to keep Kyle Teal eligible for getting the prospect and promotion incentive, whatever they call it, the draft pick you can get if your guy's on the opening day roster or gets a full year of service time and wins Rookie of the Year. And so it would be foolish for them to promote Kyle Teal before that, because again, when he's on the same team with Caro, they're gonna have to split catching 50-50. So to me, I would keep Kyle Teal down until at least mid-August at this point for both those reasons, a developmental reason for both him and Caro, and two, I might as well keep him eligible to win that award next year.
And the White Sox still have Coralie Lee and Matt Theis. Theis has been doing a good job for the White Sox. The plan was a backup catcher. He wasn't that expensive. And we'll see on how the White Sox handle as far as Coralie Lee. So they don't, to your point, Jim, it's not a pressing matter. Kyle Teal must play for the White Sox right now. They can definitely buy some time. Braden Montgomery, he ranks 38th in the top 100. He currently has an OPS over 1,000 with Winston-Salem. He started the year in Kannapolis because of that injury last year during the postseason run for Texas A&M. couldn't play any minor league baseball for the White Sox, couldn't play any minor league baseball for the Red Sox after he was drafted. Is he going to finish the year in Birmingham because he's hitting so well in Winston-Salem? It just feels like, Jim, if Montgomery did not get hurt, I should specify, if Brady Montgomery didn't get hurt, that maybe he would be with the Birmingham Barons right now just based on talent. Like, do you foresee another promotion for Brady Montgomery before the season ends?
Yeah, I think it's going to probably happen soon. Like, I'm not saying tomorrow, but the White Sox handled this very, very well. Like, I think a lot of times you, like, guys get not rushed, but like, especially the top college draft guys, like, oh, we'll send the guy high, we'll send the guy to Double A. And he's come off a broken ankle. And I think their attitude, which was great, was like, look, he's still coming, you know, he's obviously 100% healthy now, but you know, he didn't get to play last summer after he messed up his ankle on a bad slide in the Super Regionals at Texas A&M. And, you know, we talked about this, I think, Josh, like, if he doesn't break his ankle, I mean, before that, he was being talked about as a potential pick at number five. I don't know that they would, the White Sox would have taken him with their number five overall pick where they took Hagan Smith, but the A's were looking at him at four. Like, the only reason he lasted till 12 was the broken ankle. But I think they were right to slow play it. He tore up single A, which isn't shocking. He's been even better in high A. But like, if he plays like this for another month, I don't know why you wouldn't promote him to Double A at some point in June. Because he's not really being challenged that much, or he's not really struggling. So I'd say, you know, if you know, he's got what, like 66 plate appearances in high A right now, let's double that, you know, get him up around 125 or whatever. And if he's still raking, then I would get him to Double A. And I wouldn't rule out, if he continues to rake in Double A, maybe you see him in Charlotte for the final month of the season. I think this is one where, yeah, we were talking about him on our Pipeline podcast this week. You obviously knew he was good, and you didn't feel like, okay, it's a broken ankle, that's going to ruin his career or anything. But the White Sox have to be elated with how good he looks, because this is the Brady Montgomery everybody loved at Texas A&M and Stanford. I mean, he looks like that same guy.
He might be better. Yeah. Like he's taking a big step forward, especially swinging right-handed.
Yeah, and again, I think he got kind of overshadowed because last year, you know, we talked about the draft. Obviously, I mean, the White Sox are focusing on the draft. We talked about it last year, that there were kind of like eight really good players in last year's draft who everybody kind of talked about the consensus top eight. And then he broke his ankle and he wound up going 12th. But he was very much in that mix, you know, with the pitchers who were Chase Burns and Hagan Smith, who the White Sox did take. And then that Travis Bazzana, Charlie Condon, Jack Caglione, J.J. Weatherholt. I mean, Brady Montgomery was right there with those guys. And then he just kind of got, not overlooked really, but like he kind of got pushed a little to the back burner when he broke his ankle. But yeah, no, he looks great. And I don't know if you've ever talked to him yet, Josh.
I did at Sox Fest. I think he's got star potential.
Yeah, he's great person. Nice, super nice guy. White Sox fans are really, really going to like him. Like, it kind of reminds me, like, I don't think he's quite as good a prospect as this guy was. But when Chris Bryant was drafted by the Cubs, and I remember telling people up here, you know, because I live up here like you do, like, Chris Bryant's just going to own the city. Like, people are going to love him just as a player and as a personality. And I think it's going to be the same with Brady Montgomery. Like,
I agree.
I think I mentioned when we did the live podcast, when they made the Crochet trade, they made the trade, they took the players they took based on talent. But I do think, like, I want to say it's a bonus because I do think it factored in. Kyle Teal and Brady Montgomery are such good culture setters. I think those guys are going to be the guys who drive the culture, like, of the next white, you know, when the White Sox are ready to contend. Like, they have good personalities, and they're, you know, and they're more outgoing than, say, a Colson Montgomery is. Like, mm-hmm. I think those two are going to be the guys who drive. You know, they're more outgoing than a Hagan Smith or a Noah Schultz too. I think it's going to be Kyle Teal and Brady Montgomery that kind of define the culture of the White Sox when they're good again. And that's like a nice added bonus to getting in the trade.
It is. And if Montgomery, not if, when Montgomery joins Birmingham, if he continues to hit like this, I mean, the Barons are going to be completely stacked. This might be the most stacked Barons team in recent memory when it comes to just prospect value, because the Barons still have Hagan Smith and Noah Schultz. And there are White Sox fans, there are reasons to be optimistic and be positive with Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz. Smith is the 30th ranked prospect. He's only allowed 11 hits and 7 starts. That's amazing. He's allowed 20 walks. Not good. So double A hitters are having a terrible time against Hagen Smith. Batting the ball against him, barreling him up, can't do it. But they're not having that tough a time on getting on base. And Jim Margulis has seen Hagen Smith in Birmingham. Hagen Smith does not do a very good job of holding base runners. So there's some improvement that Smith needs to work on. It is 42 strikeouts, though, in 25 innings. When it comes to Hagen Smith, Jim, the control. Is this his kryptonite? Is this something that White Sox fans are going to have to worry? Will we have to have a future conversation of, is Hagen Smith more of a reliever than a starter because he just walks the world?
I don't think his control is ever going to be better than fringier average. I just think that's probably the reality. It's not the smoothest delivery. Right now I'm doing quick math in my head. I guess he's averaging what, about 7 point something walks per nine innings. It's not going to be, I think that's a little bit of a abnormality. I think he's probably gonna be a guy who probably walks around 4 per 9 innings, maybe 4.5, but counters it by not giving up hit. Like he's, you just don't hit him. Like you said, he's got almost four times as many strikeouts as hits. That's really good. And so I think he's going to be maybe one of those guys who, I mean, it's a different game now, but like back in the day, like, I don't know if Hagen Smith was going to be pitching complete games for you because the pitch counts might get up there, but like he might be a guy who, you know, maybe he doesn't pitch in the seventh inning a lot, you know, that he's successful for six innings, but the pitch count gets up there because the stuff is wipeout. I just think that's kind of who he is. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy who you're going to say, oh man, he's, you know, it's solid or better control. But again, his stuff is so good and he's so hard to hit that I don't think it's really going to matter as much as it would. I mean, totally different type. Like if Tyler Schweitzer's walking that many guys, Tyler Schweitzer's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. I know he doesn't have anything. I was just trying to think of a control guy in the system. But like, I think with Hagen, the stuff is that good that it's not going to matter as much as it would for a guy with lesser stuff.
So like Carlos Rodon comes to mind because Rodon could be that kind of guy where you look at his final line, Jim. It's 3 walks. That's not great, but it's 11 strikeouts. He's only allowed 3 hits.
Yeah, that's going to be Hagen Smith. I mean, when you think back to, I mean, I guess it was only 2/3 of a season, but like, you know, in Carlos's all-star season, well, I guess in Carlos's all-star season with the White Sox, he did pound the strike zone. But up to that point, he always walked like around 4 guys per 9 innings, you know, and missed a lot of bats. And I think that's going to be Hagen Smith.
I am pushing back on anyone that suggests that Hagen Smith should be a reliever. I'm still,
way too early.
I'm sold on him being a starter. So,
and if you look at his stats at Arkansas last year, where, you know, he set the record, NCAA Division I record for strikeouts per nine innings. Yeah. I can't remember what the exact, it was 17.3. I mean, he walked 34 guys in 84 innings, and that's college hitters. And like, I'm an SEC homer. The SEC is the best conference college baseball. So yeah, it's the SEC, but still 34 walks in 84 innings. You know, and before that, the 2 years before, he averaged over 5 walks per 9. I mean, I just think that's who he's going to be. I just think he's going to be like a 4, 4.5 walks per 9. He's not going to be 7 walks per 9, which is where he is right now.
But he could be 10, 11 strikeouts per 9.
Yeah, like, no, if not more. And the thing is, again, I don't think anybody who's worried, like, saying, oh, maybe a reliever, we got to move him. Like, he's in double A. The guy, and again, I love the SEC, but the SEC, you know, is equivalent to like the now defunct like New York Penn League and the Northwest League. Like, not everybody in the SEC is playing pro ball. And, you know, so here he is a year later. Like, last year at this time, he was getting ready to pitch in the SEC tournament, and now he's in double A. Like, there's going to be some adjustments. You know what? Guys aren't going to chase as much in double A as they did in the SEC, especially when you got like some of the most wicked stuff those hitters have ever seen. So I just think it's kind of getting acclimated to pro ball. I'm not really worried about it. I'd be more worried about it if it was like Rhett Lauder. I don't know how familiar your listeners are, but you know, Rhett Lauder was the number 7 pick in the draft of 23, and it's like a really good control guy. If Rhett Lauder was walking 7 guys per 9, I'd be like, oh my gosh, what's going on with Rhett Lauder? But like Hagen Smith's never been the polished guy. He's been the overwhelm you with stuff guy, and he's still doing that. So I'd like to see fewer walks, but to me, I look at the hits and the strikeouts, and to me, that's a very successful season.
Noah Schultz, your 13th ranked prospect in the top 100 on MLB.com. And batters are batting .298 against Schultz. He has 33 strikeouts in 32 innings, but it's 19 walks for Schultz. And he only had 17 walks with the Barons and 16 starts in AA last year. So he's already surpassed that total that he had last year, 9 fewer starts this season. Is this just a matter of not prospect fatigue, Jim, but maybe Schultz hitting the brick wall in Birmingham that we have seen for White Sox prospects at double A? And he needs to make an adjustment in his second time around in double A. And again, age is a factor here. He's still very young. So I'm like not trying to raise the red flag and say this is a huge issue, but maybe this is a good sign for prospect development that it's not going as easy as it was last year for Noah Schultz in double A, and there are some adjustments he needs to make.
I think that's all fair. The thing is, even though, he was drafted out of high school, obviously, he's only 2 weeks older than Hagen Smith, who came out of college. Like, it seems like Noah's been around for a while, and he has been around for a little while, but we forget, he only pitched 115 innings coming into this year. And I think, again, would you rather see him continuing to dominate like he did last year when he was the starting league pitcher of the year? Sure. But he's been so dominant in his career that, like, having a little adversity, like, he's not controlling or commanding his stuff as well. Like, it was always, like, amazing in a way, given how young he was and how tall he is, how well he commanded and controlled his stuff in his first couple of years in pro ball. And, like, I don't know. I've been focusing more on the drafts. I haven't tried to dig in, like, okay, what's he struggling with? Is it mechanics? What's going on? But I think having some adversity to work through is a good thing. Like, yes, if you dominate all the way up to Chicago, like, that's good too, but it's nice to have to have made some adjustments and maybe struggle a little bit before you get to the big leagues, and then it happens and you're trying to do that against big league hitters. So I'm not too concerned. Obviously a big thing this year was having him pitch deeper into games, because he just had never really done that. They'd kept him on very tight pitch counts, and he is pitching deeper into games. So I think it's just, learning that. I still like him as much as I did. If he struggled like this throughout the season, then yeah, like, we probably would knock him down a little bit from 13th. But at the same time, he's 21 years old. He's gonna be 21 almost the whole season. He's in double A. He's averaging more strikeout per inning, and he's got 3.58 ERA. Like, he's not getting lit up. The ceiling still is very high for him. So, I would expect him to throw more strikes. I think this is more of an anomaly, but, like, I'll admit, I haven't really dug in or asked anybody, like, hey, how come he isn't throwing as many strikes? Because I've been focusing more on draft stuff. But, like, I don't really have any concerns about him.
The guys that did not make the top 100, I have to ask you about Colson Montgomery, Jim. When you heard that Colson Montgomery was getting pulled out of AAA and sent to Arizona to the complex and even playing in some complex league games, what was your reaction to that news?
I think it's a good thing. We talked about this. I think we've talked about it a couple times, and, like, I like Colson Montgomery too. But, as I pointed out, and I've even internally, as much as I like him, I've been like, I think we have him ranked a little bit higher on the list because, and I know Project Birmingham, like, he wasn't necessarily going to double A because he was ready. But, like, if you look back at what he's done, like, even before this year, 22, 23, 24, he was like about a 215 hitter in double A and triple A with not a lot of power and not a lot of walks. And we both know Charlotte's a bandbox, and he had a terrible year at Charlotte last year. And he did play better the final month of the season. He did tear it up in the fall league, which is a hitter's league. And so I was expecting, like, okay, like he, like, I think the narrative was, look, he thought he had a chance to make the White Sox last year, opening day in 24, and he didn't. And then you can say it bothered him, or he tried to do too much to show he should be up there, and it snowballed. So it's like, okay, he's gotten over that. And then He was worse this year. And again, I like Colson Montgomery, but I'm looking at his career number. He's played 208 games, which is not a small sample size in Double A and Triple A. He's played 157 games in Triple A, which is essentially a full season. And he hit 208 with 210 strikeouts, 21 homers, but 210 strikeouts. And that's a problem. And I think he probably did need some sort of wake-up call, and to make some changes that obviously, I mean, that's a lot of AAA bats to struggle that much, especially in that ballpark. I'll be honest, I don't know what to make of him. Like, if he'd struggled this year, I would have been like, okay, he's struggling. But like, that doesn't even do, I mean, he was terrible in AAA. He's still young. He's still young. I mean, there's still time to turn around. But like, I kind of tell myself, like, we got to kind of retire the Corey Seager comparisons. Like, I do think, yes, is he a big guy who could stay at shortstop? Does he have left-handed power? Yes. But you can't compare him to Corey Seager as a hitter anymore. Like, he hit 214 last year and he's hitting 180 this year. And I'm not really worried about the ACL, but it's not like he went down there and he's dominating 18 and 19-year-old pitchers in the complex league. He's hitting 176.
And then Grant Taylor. So the White Sox, I'm not quite sure what they are doing with Grant Taylor. He was limited to 3 innings in each appearance. And now it sounds like he's going to be pitching out of the bullpen for the White Sox. In his last appearance, he just pitched 1 inning. It's an electric arm, it's an injured arm. So maybe the White Sox are trying to be extra careful with Grant Taylor. But could Grant Taylor be on this Michael Kopech development path? Because the White Sox seem to be. When Kopech was with the White Sox, it was he's a starter. We're going to try to make him a starter. He had flashes of greatness, but more duds than fireworks. And then eventually made him into a reliever and then traded him to the Los Angeles Dodgers, where he ended up winning a World Series. Is that a fair comp for Grant Taylor? And what do you make as far as his development path with the White Sox now?
Yeah, I was a little surprised by it. I mean, I understand, he didn't pitch in 23 because he was coming off of he had Tommy John surgery, was at LSU. And he had the lat strain last year. So he didn't pitch a lot of innings, last year either. Like, he pitched, I think, 18 innings before they shut, no, I'm sorry, 19 innings before they shut him down. And then he came back and pitched in the fall league. Now, yes, long term, if you told me Grant Taylor's a reliever, I could believe that. I mean, it's really good stuff. I mean, he could throw 101. He's got, we could sit here and argue, like, what's better, his power cutter, his power slider, or his power curveball? But it's all power. Like he almost never throws a changeup. He doesn't have as good a feel for his secondary pitches. He doesn't throw a ton of strikes. Although, on all that, I would argue, like, he really hasn't pitched in 2 years either. And he's only 22 years old. I guess he'll turn 23 in a couple days. So I get it if from a little bit, if you're trying to limit his overall innings of the season. I don't get it if you're saying at this point of his career, where he's thrown, 37 innings before they decide to make him full-time reliever. That part I would not get, because even if you're gonna make him reliever, he needs innings. And why not just see? Because if obviously starters are more valuable than relievers. Does he have closer stuff? Yes. Can I see him as a closer? I could. But I think it's a little early to pull the plug on seeing if he's a starter. Like, just based on the fact that, I mean, last year he walked two guys in 19 innings. This year it's 10 and 18. Is it going to be fringy to average control? Probably. But, kind of like I was saying with Hagen Smith, like, I think this guy's pretty hard to hit. So far in his pro career, opponents are hitting 159 off of him. And so that mitigates some of the walks when nobody can really hit you. So, like, I'm not against, at some point saying, hey, he might be a reliever. But like, even with Kopech, and Kopech's career was weird because they brought him up as a starter, and then he, had Tommy John surgery, and then he opted out during the pandemic. And then he came back. They used him back in as a reliever, and he was really good. Then he was a starter in 22, and he was pretty good. As inconsistent, but like 3.5 ERA in 25 starts, that's pretty good. Then the next year he got roughed up as a starter, and then it's back to the bullpen. Like, the Cubs kind of did this with Jeff Samardzija too. I don't know. For me, again, if it's an innings thing, a developmental thing, okay, maybe I'd buy that. But to me, I would exhaust trying to develop guys as starters before putting them in the bullpen. And if they are moving in the bullpen and this is permanent, I'm kind of shocked they did it after 37 innings.
So that's the top 100 prospect and other White Sox prospects. Let's talk about the MLB draft. As you mentioned, Jim, you're spending more time and effort as we are quickly approaching. The MLB draft is just 2 months away. This will be a somewhat important draft for the White Sox, especially if Luis Robert does not pick up his play. It's another opportunity, or the next opportunity, for the White Sox to add premium prospects to their pipeline. Jim had his first mock draft on May 6th that you could check out on MLB.com. He had the White Sox taking prep shortstop Cason Cunningham, a prep infielder from San Antonio. We'll chat about Cunningham in a moment, but Jim, I wanted to get your thoughts about the overall draft class, because for our listeners and readers at SoxMachine.com, they know that I publish a weekly MLB draft report, that I'm trying to identify some prospects, watch them over a weekend, and provide some video to help baseball fans and our fans that don't have the time to sit down and watch college baseball or the high school showcases on who these guys are before draft day. What are your thoughts about the draft class right now, 2 months away from the big day?
Yeah, it's different than what we've seen recently. I think it's below average compared to a normal draft. The past 2 years, we've been spoiled with an abundance of guys who you're like, oh man, that guy could be the number one pick. You know, in 2023, we had five guys. And last year, we had seven or eight, you know, before Braden Montgomery got hurt. And this year, there's no slam dunk. Oh, that guy's definitely number one overall pick. Like, there's quite, like, the three best guys are probably Ethan Holliday, who is very good. But, you know, there were some swing and miss issues on the circuit. Although, I mean, that happens a lot. But, like, you know, he's not a slam dunk. Like, oh, he's definitely going to hit. But he's got, a, you know, obviously good lineage and all kinds of power. Seth Hernandez is, you know, very talented right-handed pitcher at Corona High School. But he's a high school righty, and that scares a lot of teams. And he throws hard. And guys who throw hard at a young age often blow out. Doesn't mean they can't come back. But, like, you know, a little bit of a concern for that. You have Jamie Arnold, probably the best college pitcher. And he's good, but, like, he's not – you know, we've been spoiled. You know, he's a lefty. He's not in the Hagen Smith class. Like, he would have gone probably, I don't know, 10 to 15 range last year. He wouldn't have been a top five pick. And he's your best college pitcher for a lot of guys. There's no college bat who warrants going 1-1. So it's a little bit of a down class. I want to ask you, before you ask me about players, it's early and obviously things can change. But who are you hoping for? Who is your best realistic hope at number 10?
All right, so let me pull up, because the Sox Machine Top 100, last prospect update was just top 50. But for podcast listeners, the top 100 draft prospects, from my point of view, will be released this upcoming week during the conference tournament week. Right now, I'll just go off my top 10, because if I was in the draft room with Mike Shirley, here's my 10 guys, Mike. Whoever is remaining on this list, this is the one that I would like the White Sox
okay,
to go
and as
with.
We go down, I'll tell you if they have any chance, I think, of getting to 10.
Okay. Ethan Holliday, no.
No.
He's number one. Seth Hernandez, I have number two.
They're like slight. I can't imagine, like, the Reds really passing on him at nine, but because he's a high school righty, perhaps, but, like, not realistically, no.
I have Eli Willits at number three.
I'm a big Eli Willits fan, too. I think there's... I can't really see him getting to 10. I wouldn't say I bet my life on it, but, like, it feels like it'd be like a 1% chance.
I have Arquette from Oregon State, number four. It's a top college bat.
Yeah, and I think that's the consensus top college bat. And because of that, there's no way the top college bat's not going in the first nine picks.
Then I have a run of college pitchers. I got Jamie Arnold, number five.
I don't think there's any chance he gets to the White Sox.
No. I got Cade Anderson from LSU, number six.
I don't think there's any chance. He came out of a start last week with cramps, but I think he pitched last night and looked fine. I don't think there's any chance, and Cade Anderson might be the first college lefty taken.
Liam Doyle, Tennessee.
He's a tough one. He's been the most dominant starter all year, but it's like his delivery does not say starter, and he throws 75% fastballs even though he has good secondary pitches. I think those three lefties are all going to go pretty good. I don't think it's impossible he gets to 10, but I don't think the White Sox are on him at 10. So could he get there? Yes. Would they take him? I don't think they would take him if he got to him.
Number eight, I got Kaysen Witherspoon, the righty from Oklahoma.
Yeah, he's interesting. I think it's kind of 50-50 on whether he gets to them, just because, if you have him eighth, that's about where we have him. And so then it's like, do guys go ahead of him? Do people cut deals? That type of thing.
Right.
I think the White Sox would consider him, but I think they'd more likely take one of the high school shortstops over him. So, but I think it's 50-50 he gets to 10.
And then we get to the prep infielders. This is the list of three that I'm now focusing on. So for all the Sox Machine readers that are on me in my first mock, mocking Brendan Summerhill to the White Sox, don't worry about that.
That's not impossible. I will say about Brendan Summerhill, who stupidly punched a water cooler and broke his hand. I do think he is going to move up. And if you told me Brendan Summerhill wound up being the second or third college hitter drafted, that's not impossible. I think another number of teams like his all-around game.
Okay.
You can kind of glass half full or glass half empty that, like, oh, it's an all-around game. And there are people like, yeah, but how many of the tools are better than average?
Right.
You could quibble back and forth, but like that's not no nobody should give you a hard time about Brendan Summerhill. Like I don't think
They
like I
get.
think they'll get somebody probably better, but like if you told me Brendan Summerhill went ahead of the White Sox, I would not be like, oh, that's impossible. It could happen
Okay.
if he finishes strong.
They just don't like the idea that Sox Machine readers and listeners, they want someone with more potential than Summerhill. I think
He's
they
got good
understand that.
potential. I like him. I think Brendan Summerhill could be. If you think he's going to hit for power, he could have solid tools across the board.
He just checks a lot of the boxes that the White Sox like in the draft. But it's these three prep infielders: Billy Carlson, Seth's teammate in Corona, Kaysen Cunningham, and JoJo Parker. That's so I gave you 11. Jace
Yep.
Laviolette's number 12. So there you go. I gave you 12
And
podcast
well,
listeners.
man, Lavalette is just. I
I
think
don't
he's like
know.
three for his last. They're playing my Bulldogs this weekend. Last time I checked, I think he was like three for his last 26 in the last three SEC series with like 14 or 15 strikeouts. All those guys could be in play. All those guys could go slightly ahead of the White Sox. All those guys could, be in play for them. I think I'd throw Steele Hall in there. I know my colleague Jonathan Mayo. I think he had the White Sox taking Jace Lavallette. He had a mock draft out this week. But yeah, all those. I think it's ultimately going to come down to high school infield. Like I'm acting like this is all preordained. We have way too much time, 2 months before the draft. I think it's going to come down to high school shortstop versus Kaysen Witherspoon. When all is said and done.
I'm in the
So.
same boat that it almost for me at this stage, having to w watch so much college baseball this year, and even like texting like Mike Farren, Jim, like during the
Yeah.
season, because he's calling games. I mean, he was calling Florida State, North Carolina, and you firsthand look at Jamie Arnold, tell me what you think of Luke Stevenson as well, who's probably the top college catcher in this draft class. Having done this since Valentine's Day, I even submitted my Dick Houser top eight player of the year award ballot, Jim. I struggled with that. I couldn't
Yeah.
think of eight college players that should deserve to be player of the year this year.
Well, it's weird that it's not only do I think the talent's down, but the numbers are down. I don't know if it's because I don't know what's going on with the bats or the balls, but like it feels like they don't seem the same. Like last year, it seemed like everybody, like every one of the guys that we were talking about is like, all those college hitters along with Bray Montgomery. It seemed like every one of those guys had like a 1300 ops and was hitting like, 580 with 52 homer. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but like everybody was having just an unbelievable year. And it was crazy. And this year, there aren't that many guys having big years like that, really. But yeah, I do think it's going to come down. Yeah, like I said, I would throw Steele Hall in there as another one. You could almost throw David Pierce. Like it's interesting because when I talk to people, Billy Carlson's probably the most famous, and he's like some guys will say he's the best defensive shortstop they've ever seen in high school, but like needs a swing makeover. Like they don't like his swing. Like, but they think it's an easy fix. It's not like it always scares me if you're taking a guy high. Like, oh, we got to remake him, but. Like their guys will put a four hit on Billy Carlson and a seven glove and five power. And it's like, well, can you get him to five hit and five or six power? In which case, man, he'd be a superstar. And he might be like we're talking about PCA earlier. Like, if he just hits a little bit with as good as he is defensively, that's fine. And again, most of the guys I talk to think it's an easy fix. It's just they don't like his setup and the way he does things, and they think it just needs to be adjusted. But he's probably the most famous. But like, when you talk about Carlson or Hall or JoJo Parker or Cunningham or even Daniel Pierce from Georgia too, depending on who you talk to, you get guys like, oh, like, I think that guy's a first rounder. And then you talk to other guys who might be like, oh, I think that guy's more of a second rounder. Like you just get people all over the map. I think you get people all over the map, even within specific organizations, on the guy. Like Billy Carlson, like I said, it's the best defense of that group. And he's probably, again, like, it's risky to say, hey, we have to remake his swing. So that could bother you. You know, with Cason Cunningham, like, he was as good a hitter as there was on the showcase circuit last summer, him and Gavin Fien. And he's been good, not great this spring. Like, he hasn't been bad, but it hasn't been like, wow. Like, the bat hasn't been wow like it was last summer. And he's got kind of more, like, he can run, but it's more of a, like, it's not the lean athlete. It's more of a Jose Ramirez build. And some guys think he has to move to second. So that obviously would hit his value. JoJo Parker is probably the best bat of all those guys. Like, it could be, if you want to dream on JoJo Parker, it could be like 275 with 25 homers. But he probably has a lead, he has the least chance of all those guys that's sticking it short. So, like, you have to factor that in. And then Steele Hall, who I brought up, he's the fastest runner. He's probably a 70 runner, and he's a legit shortstop. Maybe he's a 60 shortstop, but like, his swing looks good in BP, but then he tries to do too much in games. So, depending on scouts you talk to, there are guys who are like, if you think he's going to hit, then you really like him. He's up there. He's close to Billy Carlson. But if you question the bat, I have guys who think he's a second rounder. Like, you could dream on him a little bit and maybe go, like, that's kind of what Trey Turner looked like in high school. So, like, again, that runs the game. And then Daniel Pierce is kind of like, he's not the best in any of the categories, but like, he's a solid hitter with probably average power, you know, good runner. He's not like Steele Hall, you know, solid defender at short. Like, he's got kind of a good all around, but like, he isn't the best in any category, but he doesn't really have any area where you'd be like, oh, like, that's my question on him. It's a pretty good all around game. So I think the White Sox, even internally, are trying to figure out which of those guys they like. But I think it's going to probably come down to one of them or Kyson Witherspoon. And if they don't have a consensus internally, and like, I don't think there's a consensus in the industry as to how you line up all those guys after you get past Holiday and Willits, maybe it comes down to, hey, we like three of these high school shortstops the same, and one of these we can cut a deal with. Like, if one guy has a lower asking price, then maybe that's the tiebreaker.
Yeah, because my mentality right now, if I was in that draft room advising Mike Shirley, let's get someone at 6 million at pick 10, and then try to sign the best prep player we can in the second round at pick 44 for 3 million. I know it's like the money game, and it's maybe not necessarily taking the best player available, Jim. It's the best player available that you can sign, but I'm preparing for the White Sox to be willing to go pretty significantly over slot at pick 44 to try to get another premium bat into the system. But at pick 10, I think I'm just focusing now on these prep infielders. And if they're all off the board, if all five of these guys, I
There's
need to
no,
do.
I don't think that can quite happen. I don't think you can get five of them off the board.
Okay. Then that's probably what I'm looking at with these three. I need to do more homework on Steele Hall. I have him as the 16th ranked prospect right now, but I need to do more research on him. But
And
Lavlie
don't
at.
sleep on Daniel Pierce. Like, Daniel Pierce isn't as famous as these guys because, again, I don't think you could say he's the best defender like Billy Carlson, or he's the best bat like JoJo Parker, or he's the best pure hitter like Cason Cunningham, or he's the fastest runner and he has like some Trey Turner in him like Steele Hall. Like, Daniel Pierce doesn't do any of those things, but he's pretty good across the board. And I think Daniel Pierce like is going to go right around the same range. So,
Okay.
yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how those guys play out. And like, again, I don't even know that they have to take a discount, because if they spend their overage, they can get to 3 million on that second pick anyway. It's just it might be a consideration if it's like, hey, we don't love any of these guys as like clearly above the others. If one guy wants full slot at 6'2" and one guy might take 5.5, then maybe we take the 5.5, and then we can already go to 3 million with pick 44, and now we can go to 1.8 on pick 76.
I think the White Sox are spending $9 million or more on their first two picks. I'm pretty confident in that regard. So, podcast listeners, yes, I know what the draft value slot is at pick 44, but I think they're going to try to push that up and try to get another prep player. It'd be weird that the White Sox go prep rounds one and two, but as much as college baseball I've watched this year, Jim, I feel like that's the way to go. And I think White Sox fans would be really underwhelmed if they take another college pitcher. But the White Sox have dealt with a lot of pitching injuries this year. It's just that Laviolette, I started to watch Aloy a little bit more at Arkansas. Merrick Houston went, what, 6 weeks between hitting a home run? Ike Irish doesn't even play catcher anymore
No,
for
he's going to be.
Auburn.
I think he's going to be drafted as an outfielder.
Okay. And you and I talked about Gavin Killian, and of course, I got him hurt by just hyping him up. It feels like, and he had a hot start. And then you got the Indiana outfielders, Devin Taylor, and then we talked about Summerhill. Ethan Conrad for Wake Forest has got talent, but he got hurt and he's missing the rest of the season. I've been waiting all season, Jim, for a college hitter to get hot to show that they are worth being selected in the 10th overall pick. And there's only one guy I've got confidence in, and that's Arquette. And I don't even think he's leaving the top five in this draft. So it's 2 months away, but I just find myself, Jim, okay, so it's either prep infielder or college pitcher. And I don't think I've ever been that restricted in my analysis before watching the draft through a White Sox prism.
No, I think you're exactly right. I mean, you can look at it like Kyle Teal and Brayden Montgomery were two more college bats they got, but like Avar Arquette is the best college guy, but like he wouldn't go ahead of Brayden Montgomery in last year's draft, and he'd probably go behind Cam Smith. Like Avar Arquette might he might go a little higher than that, but Avar Arquette I think would be a 10 to 15 guy, and all the other guys you mentioned, like Jason Laviolette's going backwards. I would probably pass on him if he were there at 10. The swing and miss is bothering
It's a
him
huge
more.
concern. I mean, he could strike out
And he
35% of
swings
the
and
time.
misses. He swings and misses in the zone. And if what's funny is he got off to a slow start this year, and I think it was because he was trying to be too disciplined and he wasn't being who he was. And then he got going again, but now he struggled so much down the stretch. Like you could make a case for him. I mean, that was a guy who a lot of people thought was the best player in the draft coming into the year. He was definitely the best college position player in the draft coming into the year. So you can look at it as a hey, we never thought we were going to get this guy, and we think he'll be okay. And he's not just a hitter; he's athletic. But all those other guys you mentioned, like Merrick Houston, good shortstop. It might be fringy hit, fringy power. Like I don't want fringy hit. Like this is kind of like Merrick Houston might be like a better fielding version of Jacob Gonzalez. Like I don't think what like he might be better than that.
Yeah,
Well, I thought Jacob
no, you
Gonzalez was
might be
going to hit more
right.
than he would, but like, so like, you don't really want that at 10. And like, Ike Irish is a corner guy. Like Luke Stevenson's interesting as a catcher, but like, not that you draft for need. They don't need another catcher. And like, Luke Stevenson's hitting like 280 at North Carolina. I do think he's the best catcher. Like, Killen's an interesting one, but he's having a really good year. But I think you can ask yourself, like, okay, Gavin Killen's probably the best pure hitter in the college ranks. Like, we could give him that, but does he do anything else better than average? I don't know
No.
that he does. And like, so again, I mean, there's more risk involved with the high school guys. I'd be more inclined, all those guys intrigue me. Like all those guys really intrigue me. And I'd be curious how many of those guys, like if Eli Willett's got to the White Sox, I love Eli Willett. I'm like you. I would be like, give me Eli Willett. Like that's easy. But then, if it's the Carlson, Parker, Pierce, Hall, Cunningham group, let's see who's there and think about it. But like those guys, yeah, there's more risk, but they might be better than the college players you're looking at that point. So I think you're right on with your analysis, Josh. I mean, Sox Machine fans are lucky to have you because you know what you're doing. But like that, I think it is going to come down to Witherspoon. Maybe Tyler Bremner pushes his way back up a little bit. But I think those would be the two college arms that would be there. And other than that, I think, like it's possible, depending on how the draft plays out, that the first four or five guys left on the White Sox board could all be prep infielders at that point.
And they may go prep back to back, like pick 44, the area code game guys that they had. Like, that's what I've
Well,
been
you
hearing
know
that they're
they pick you,
interested.
you yeah R what? The White Sox are going to draft guys off their area code game teams? Josh, they would never do that. Like, come on, what are you talking about? Like,
Jaden
who?
Fausk is going to the White Sox at pick 44. Book it. That's the
No, I'm
only
saying
pick
like,
I'm confident
yeah, it's like I have to look here. Who else was on that team? I haven't taken a close look, but I mean, we know they do that. I mean, that's not their sole strategy, but that's what they do. Like I feel like there's at least, I don't know, what, five guys on my White Sox top 30 who were a part of their area code roster, right?
Yeah, and like Jack Bauer from Lincoln Way East, he's the kid that's hitting 102.
He's
I
not thrown
got
as many strikes recently, so
sounds
that.
like a White Sox pitcher already. Matthew Fisher, that's your Indiana guy. That's your
He,
Evansville, Indiana.
oh, like, and prep pitchers go a little bit lower than they should, and he's
Yeah.
Indiana. Matthew Fisher's a good one. I can see
Yeah.
that.
So like Jack Bauer, Fosk, Fisher, those are the three prep guys that have circled at pick 44 for the White Sox. I'm like, oh yeah, one of these three, the Mike Shirley special. They're going to the White Sox in the second round. And then third round, I think that's where you can start going back to the college ranks that you can find some good value, some guys that have a couple of average skills that could help out to address, especially on the hitting side, if you want someone that's a little bit more further advanced hitting or has faced advanced pitching, or if you want to stockpile on pitchers, that's where you get into like the Jared Spencer ranks of the college pitching when you get to the third round, if he's still on the board. But I am also
That
curious to.
one might be tough just because it's a shoulder. Like,
Yeah.
but yeah, I mean, it's in, I think you also, you kind of let you see what's there and have some flexibility. But yeah, it's like, I totally forgot about the area code connection, but yeah, I mean, or maybe they just go double area code and maybe you go get an Ethan Moore out of Oak Park as a,
Oh,
as
yeah.
another high school infielder, or, Cameron Appenzeller is kind of backed up this year. So like I think he's going to wind up at Tennessee, but maybe they just go double, they go double area code, for all we know.
That they could. They could. So a lot to chew on, podcast listeners. I'm hoping that before he makes his way, Atlanta, right? That's where you guys gonna be this year for the draft.
Yes.
So before Jim goes to Atlanta, that week leading up to the draft, hopefully we buy some time from him and record another podcast episode to get the latest MLB draft dope. But listen to Jim and Jonathan Mayo on the MLB Pipeline podcast. It's part of my podcast rotation. Subscribe to that show wherever you listen to podcasts. Of course, read Jim's excellent work on MLB.com and pester him with questions when he has his weekly mailbag. You can follow him on Twitter. He's at Jim Callis MLB. Or if you have Blue Sky, Jim's over there as well. Just search Jim Callis on Blue Sky. And Jim, look forward to chatting with you before the MLB draft, so we have the latest intel and educate podcast listeners of what to expect. But thank you so much for coming back on the Sox Machine podcast.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me again, Josh. And I'll just reiterate, like everybody should keep listening to you, because I think you're right on it with where you think the White Sox are going at 10. You got all the right names, at least the same ones I do.
That will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also listen and watch our videos on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on social media. We're on all the platforms at Sox Machine, including Blue Sky. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox, their minor league system, the Major League Baseball draft, and other happenings around Major League Baseball, sign up to become a Sox Machine subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. That gets you an ad-free version of both the podcast and the website, unlocks all of our content, and even the comment section as well. We have additional tiers of support, so if you want additional benefits, you can certainly sign up, including our Veterans Committee, which gets you into the group chat so you have direct access to the Sox Machine beat reporter James Vegan when he is on site working the clubhouses. Again, monthly plans start at $5. You can also gift subscriptions, and there are annual discounts. Sign up at SoxMachine.com. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.